Here are three things I think you should know about today. First of all, President Trump is going after India. He's hitting them with 50% tariffs for buying Russian oil. India, in return, is saying, look, to provide for our people, we're going to buy oil from whoever we want to buy oil from. That's what they say. By the way, what's behind this defiance on the part of India? Because it's a little surprising, right? China. China. And its $300 billion dump of U.S. treasuries. See, this is huge. Not something a lot of people are talking about. I'm going to put it all together for you with none other than Gerald Celente, who talks about this all the time. This is the Sanchez Effect. Let's do it. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we're going to begin with India. India in the crosshairs, right? Right? And you know what India is saying while it finds itself in the crosshairs? Go ahead. Shoot. I dare you. Yeah. That's what India is saying. India is surprising a lot of people with its bravado in this case. But then again, remember, it didn't get to be the world's fastest growing economy for nothing. What it's doing is it's actually reading the global economic environment, right? Which is why it's telling the United States, go pound sand, figuratively, of course. I'm going to share with you their exact words in just a little bit. But first, let me try and catch you up on this story, right? Because this story doesn't begin with India. It begins in Moscow. That's where yesterday Donald Trump's New York real estate buddy, Steve Witkoff, was sent to meet with President Putin. And a smiling Vladimir Putin cordially sat down with Mr. Witkoff so the two men could discuss how they could end the war in Ukraine. However, Mr. Putin was not willing to end the war simply on Mr. Trump's terms, i.e. NATO's terms. Stay with me. So soon after that meeting, and presumably after Witkoff reported back to Trump that there was no deal, the White House announced that Trump would punish India for buying Russia's oil and for having friendly economic ties with Russia. How dare they be friends with Russia and expect to be friends with us, says Trump. So he is supposedly slapping India with secondary sanctions and higher tariffs, actually, 50% tariffs now, 25 to 50 now, for buying oil from Russia.
We've made a lot of progress. And as you know, we put a 50% tariff on India on oil. They're the second largest. They're very close to China in terms of the purchase of oil from Russia. But so I don't know if that had anything to do with it. But we've had very productive talks today.
So he hits India, but he's not done yet. Then Mr. Trump is asked about China, and he goes even further, suggesting he's also going to hit China with more sanctions and more tariffs if they don't stop buying oil and doing business with Russia. And keep in mind, this is after he's already hit sanctioning Brazil and, of course, sanctioned Russia. So would it be fair for China and others to ask, who does this guy think he is? Right? Here's Trump threatening China for like the 500th time in the last 5 months.
China facing potential secondary sanctions for Russian oil. Them having that tariff or sanction, rather, or not hinges on what going forward?
It may happen. I mean, I don't know. I can't tell you yet, but we did it with India. We're doing it probably with a couple of others. One of them could be China, yes.
So the real question is, what will India do, right? And often when we think of India, we think of a country that's somewhat conciliatory, right? Prime Minister Modi's always seemed to know how to find the middle in situations. In this case, though, India's holding its ground. I mean, hell, they're returning fire with a bit of a strong retort. Here is what they said.
It is therefore extremely unfortunate that the US should choose to impose additional tariffs on India for actions that several other countries are also taking in their own national interest. We reiterate that these actions are unfair, unjustified, and unreasonable. India will take all actions necessary to protect its national interests.
Damn, right? Those are fighting words. And then India went even further, doubling down by signaling that it's actually going to continue its relationship with Russia. And they didn't just say it, they did it. They sent their national security advisor to Moscow. He's here in Moscow to discuss business with senior Russian officials. Have that, U.S. Have that, Washington. And then, wait, if that wasn't enough, you know what they did? They announced something that's really important. They went even further. I guess we could say they're not just doubling down in this case. They're tripling down. Here's what else India is doing. Modi has announced that he will be going back to meet with this guy. Yeah, that's China's leader Xi Jinping at the end of August. For the first time in 7 years, Mr. Modi will be attending the SCO summit. That's where countries that have joined, like China, Russia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Pakistan, and Iran. Now, did you notice something about all of those countries? Those are all the countries in this part of the world who feel continually, you know, bigfooted by Washington. And essentially, you know what? I mean, they're just saying, look, we're tired of this. Just the same as like with BRICS, right? BRICS countries say the same thing. So what Mr. Trump's tariffs and sanctions seem to be doing, not just in the case of India, but with many independent sovereign nations, is it's kind of bringing them closer together, essentially empowering them as a group. Is that the only reason, though, why India is holding its ground and remaining defiant against threats and sanctions from Donald Trump for the sake of unity because they want to be with their buds? No, that's not the reason. There's another reason. Another reason, it's more important. It is that Modi no longer sees the U.S. or its currency or Donald Trump as being as big or as bad as he thinks he is. Modi is thinking this, right? You see, the U.S. dollar is having its worst year since 1973. You've probably heard that the dollar, which is the standard currency used worldwide, has been devaluing for many, many years. You know that. Everybody knows that, or a lot of people know that. Now appears, though, that because of Mr. Trump's bullying or his tariffs or his sanctions, he may actually be pushing the dollar right over the cliff. Look at this headline. This is a headline in The Guardian. Trust in the U.S. is eroding. The question isn't if the U.S. dollar will lose supremacy, it's when. And if it loses supremacy, it will likely lose out to a consortium of countries, countries that are tired of being treated like children who are surpassing Washington in many ways, and the West. By the way, they're bigger in population. They're bigger in terms of how large their standing armies are. They're bigger in GDP growth. Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa have been joined now by Vietnam, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Belarus. I could go on. And this grouping of BRICS nations is fast becoming the world's, you know, the cool kids on the block, right? They're the cool kids now. It's a group that's popular. A bunch of nations say, we want in. Can we join? While the G7? Not. They're declining. And what's the fuel that feeds or fed the G7? The dollar. So now look at this. China. Perhaps like a shark smelling blood in the water, is doing something that is unprecedented. Take a look at this graph. See that? Look at that pink line. See that pink line? That's China. China has now dumped more than $300 billion worth of U.S. treasuries just over the past 5 years. That's the direction they think it's going. Something we haven't seen before happen among trading partners. And with such obvious strategic intent, all BRICS nations, but especially China, seem to be telling Donald Trump something pretty clearly. Two can play at this game, and we can play harder, and we can keep it going longer. Funny thing is, the damage to the dollar as the world standard currency is something that Mr. Trump has bragged about, said in the past that he'll figure it out, but past presidents, he said, were too stupid to avoid it. Here it is.
If you have a smart president, you will never lose the standard. If you have a stupid president, like the last one, you would lose the standard. You wouldn't have the dollar as you. And if we lost the world standard dollar, that would be like losing a war, a major world war. We would not be the same country any longer.
Yeah, Well, look, the war, as he calls it, may not be lost, but there are certainly some important battles that aren't going his way right now. India, for example, that's pretty obvious. As for Mr. Trump, after bragging that he and only he would be able to strengthen the value of the dollar, I don't know, man. I think he's actually doing the opposite. In fact, he, more than any other president before him, is actually seemingly, I'll ask my guest who's an expert on this, he may be accelerating de-dollarization. Accelerating de-dollarization, right? Let's talk about this with somebody who knows this stuff only too well. That's why I listen to him a lot. His name is Gerald Celente. He's an American Trends forecaster. He's the publisher of the Trends Journal. He's the founder and the director of the Trends Research Institute. And there he is with his smiling face, always excited to have a good conversation with somebody who is smart. The best we can do is me, so let's have at it. Gerald, how are you, my friend?
Thank you for your kindness. How am I? I'm very blessed to everything I have, very sad to see what's going on in the world. And it breaks my heart as a true American, a Napolitano born in the Bronx, I'm the same age as Trump, 1946, when America was at the height and the spirit was at the height. And now it's just a freak show. And again, not only Trump, one after another. So, and it's just getting worse. And you talked about the nations and how they're, the BRICS are uniting against the dollar. The world has had enough of the United States hegemony. This is your Trends Journal when it used to be a quarterly. See how happy that guy is? It's the United States overthrow, the democratically elected government of Viktor Yanukovych in Ukraine in 2014. This is an article by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, former Assistant Treasury Secretary under Ronald Reagan. You ready?
Yeah.
Here you go. Talking about America. Washington is driving the world to the final war. Now, here's the important one. World hegemony is not a right America has earned. The world is becoming fed up. You're looking at India. What do you got? 1.4 billion people? What do you got? China, 1.4 billion people? What do you have in America? 347 million? You don't have to be good at math to figure this out.
Yeah.
When you put all the BRICS together, they've had enough. Look what Lula's doing in Brazil. They've had enough. And then going on with the dollar. One of our top trends is death of the dollar.
Yeah.
America's become the country that our founding fathers fought against. Great Britain. The sun never sets on the British Empire. We killed people all over the world. Yeah, we became that military-industrial complex. Rather than building up the economy, we built up the military. Oh, and not my language. A real man, five-star general, supreme commander of the Allied forces, and two-term president, Dwight D. Eisenhower. The military-industrial complex is robbing the nation of the genius of the scientists, sweat of the laborers, and the future of the children. So America's wasted. And the roads in America are crap.
Yeah.
Potholes everywhere. Hey, take the subway in New York. Yeah, a night in Calcutta. Yeah. One Amtrak? How about Amcrap? You been anywhere else in the world?
By the way,
I'm telling you this.
By the way, I got to stop you for a minute. I happen to be in Moscow. I'm not a big metro guy, but I've never in my life seen a metro more clean, more beautiful, more wonderful for the people who are there. It's like a museum when you ride this thing, spick and span, if you know what I mean. There's a word from our generation. And yet in my country, the United States of America, the infrastructure is a mess. And we're sending most of the money that could be used to fix that infrastructure to create better programs like they have here in Russia. I mean, I hate to, you know, I'm sitting here just bragging about Russia. But if you're a woman in Russia, you get 7 weeks before the baby's born, 7 weeks after the baby's born, so you can be with the baby. If you're a man, they make sure you have at least 4 weeks of vacation, or a woman, from your job, mandatory. I mean, they have health care for all of the people. And yet, the money we could use to create those kinds of things in our country, they go to Israel, they go to Egypt, they go to Ukraine. Sorry, I'm getting like you, but, you know, this kind of stuff is crazy, man.
It's crazy. And again, the money's been wasted. It hasn't built up the economy. Look what Trump did, another $1 trillion of military industrial complex. And you just had that clip on him saying that, you know, in a war, you know, America hasn't won a war since World War II. Couldn't beat the Vietnamese. You only killed 3.5 million of them. Oh, and Trump got, what, 4 or 5 draft deferments. I did, too. But I was stupid enough to believe in the war as a young kid. But I just want to get my brains blown out. Mm. But again, all these people, I launched a movement called Occupy Peace, by the way. I have peace rallies every year. I'm having one on September 27th up here in Kingston with Judge Napolitano, Scott Ritter. So it's not just empty words. What's going on is the economy is going down. The death of the dollar has already begun. So now let's put it together. Let's go back to 2018.
Okay.
The Dow had the worst December since the Great Depression. What did Trump do? He forced Powell to lower interest rates.
Yes. Yes.
What did Powell lowered interest rates in December? Okay. The lower interest rates go, you mentioned that the dollar's had its worst year since 1973.
Mm-hmm.
The lower interest rates go, the deeper the dollar falls. And by the way, the deeper the dollar falls, the higher gold prices go up. Mm. And as we're speaking now, gold is what, about $3,384 an ounce, up 27%.
Is that what China's buying? Is that what, yeah, I did that graph. I don't know if you saw it, where China's dumping U.S. treasuries. Are they, what are they buying? Crypto? Are they buying gold?
No, they're buying gold.
They are buying gold.
Yeah, they're buying gold. Yeah, the World Gold Council. All the countries are buying up more and more and more gold.
Huh.
Gold is the number one safe haven asset. Matter of fact, one of our top trends for 2024 was a golden year for gold. Gold went up in 2024 to 2025. It went up another 27%. Gold is telling the story. The world is look at the numbers that just came out, the employment numbers in America last week.
Yeah.
And what did Trump do? He fired the woman that was the head of that put out the data, Bureau of Labor Statistics.
That's crazy. That's crazy. The idea, it's like Caligula or something. You bring me bad news, off with your head. That lady had nothing to do with putting the numbers together. There's probably 100, 200 people who worked on that with computers to put that together, and he fires one person.
So going back to it, the jobs, by the way, that were created, and we write about this each week in the Trends Journal when they come out, each time the numbers come out, the jobs that are being created are in the healthcare sector and service sector. These are low-paying jobs. And then you start looking at the data, look at the debt levels going up, the delinquencies on credit cards going up, housing numbers going down. And by the way, there's also going to be very important, they're over-investing in the dot-com sector in the United States. Trends are born, they grow, they mature, reach old age, and die.
Mm.
The AI trend was just born in 2022. You don't invest all your dough in that kind of company, and that's what they've happened. Let's go back to January of this year. DeepSeek, whoever heard of DeepSeek, they come out. We don't need to spend $100 million to make this AI. We could do it with $6 million. And now the Chinese AI, the most watched in the world, we don't need 100 million, 6 million. What happened to NVIDIA stock that day? Went down 17%, 600 billion wiped out. Hmm. So that's what's going on. There's going to be a dot-com bust.
Were you surprised?
By the way, this was your...
Gerald, I'm sorry. Finish your point. I apologize for interrupting. Finish your point.
No, that's right. No, this was our magazine when it was a quarterly back in 1999, dot-com this.
Yeah.
We call the dot-com bust... We said it would bust by the second quarter 2000. It did. China's going to lead the world in AI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, in tracking trends, you make connections between different fields. Before this guy, this was a T-shirt I did in 1992 when Bill Clinton ran for office.
All right. Beware.
This is the guy that brought China into the World Trade Organization. Yeah. Go back to 2000. 10% of Chinese 18-year-olds went to college. Today, nearly 70%. I'm mentioning this because young people are all AI high tech addicted. They're going to college to learn more and more and more about this. And China's investing big dough into AI. There's going to be a dot-com bust. It's going to bring down the markets. The lower the markets go, the higher gold prices go, and the deeper the dollar falls.
There's going to be a dot-com bust, another one, based on the exuberance over AI. Is that your prediction?
It's not the exuberance. It's over-investing in the companies that have just been born.
Yeah. Okay.
And again, you look at DeepSeek. No, we don't need these huge chips. We could do it with smaller chips. So the Chinese are totally, totally focused on this. They're going to lead the world in it. Again, look at the numbers again. 1.4 billion against 347 million. And they're not stupid people. America's dumbing down all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. Have you seen some of the people that Mr. Trump gets advice from? I mean, even this guy, Witkoff, who was shy, who showed up here in Moscow yesterday. I'm sure he's a wonderful guy and a real good real estate dude. But what the hell is he doing negotiating with Putin? I mean, we can't find somebody who's an actual geopolitical expert who has mediating experience. Like, hey,
They don't have any.
I mean, right?
Name me one that they ever had. Who was a little clown boy before him? Oh, Anthony Blinken? Oh, my daddy was ambassador to Hungary. My uncle was ambassador to Belgium. I went to Dalton. I went to Harvard. There's a guy by the name of George Carlin one time.
Yeah.
It's one big club and you ain't in it.
Right.
That's his line. It's a freak show. By the way, I was the assistant to the secretary of the New York State Senate. Picture me when I put on a brunch for Ronald Reagan when I was 30 years old with 16 of our board of directors.
Right.
I've been on the other side. It's a freak show.
No, I...
And not only in the United States.
You're
globally.
Right.
Look at the little garçon over there in Macron, over there in France.
Yeah.
Starmer. Mertz.
Yeah, they're.
I mean, one jerk after another.
Yeah, they're like actors. They're like, so they. Here's my theory on that. You tell me if I'm right. Very powerful people in this world, in places like the UK, who picked this clown Starmer, or in France, who picked, you know, Macron and Brigitte, and in the United States, who picked the Obamas and the Bidens and the Trumps to a certain extent with a $500 million check from the Adelsons. These people are really in charge, and the people we see in front, those I just named and many others, they're actors. They're literally actors playing a part and have nothing to do with actual policy. Am I crazy for saying that?
Okay, you ready for this?
No.
Yes. We own the trademark presidential reality show. Exactly what you said. It's a show.
Yeah.
They're actors.
Yeah.
They're little nothing boys and girls.
And I think the Trump experience in the last 5 or 6 months to me has borne it out more than at any other time in my lifetime. I'm one of those idiots who bought into, maybe it's because, you know, Biden was such a, well, he was what he was. I bought into the fact that this guy's crazy enough to do things differently. This guy's going to go with his gut. This guy's going to make decisions. He's going to end wars. He's going to do all the things. He's going to tell us how JFK was killed. He's going to let us know about Epstein. All these things, this transparency is going to come about. Gerald, I've never seen something be completely the opposite of what I expected or wanted. I swear.
You ready?
Yeah.
This is your economic update in this week's Trends Journal. Again and again, week after week, month after month, as we have detailed, another wild card, which was one of our top trends, and another Trump card, another top trend,
yeah,
are played. And where it goes, nobody knows. It's the way of Donald Trump's world, and the world knows it. Think about it. Can you get more of a mainstream and overall in what we consider to be a top financial newspaper than the Financial Times? This is the headline. This was in Monday's edition.
Yeah.
Mixed signals from the White House typify chaotic Trump trade policy. That's in the Financial Times. They go on to say, since April 2nd, when Trump unveiled his Liberation Day trade war, his approach had been a case study in volatility. He changes his mind every day. Hey, you elect me, I'm going to end that Ukraine war in 24 hours, right?
Yeah.
Hey,
right.
Now that I'm in office, I'm going to end that Ukraine war before I get into office. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. It's one thing after another. Liberation Day, we're going to put these tariffs on. Now we're taking them off. It keeps changing. Look at the chips tariffs he puts on.
And the economy lost, $10 trillion? It wasn't a joke. It wasn't like somebody gained, somebody lost. No, it's gone. $10 trillion were lost in that little tariff game. Is that right? You're an economist. I'm not. You know more than I do about
that. I'm not sure the number. But I'm just saying how he keeps changing his mind over and over. By the way, I had lunch with his brother in 2017, Robert Trump.
Really?
He had a restaurant up here in Wissahick, which is across the river up here in New York. And he went on to tell me that when the father died, he left the family over $500 million worth of real estate.
Yeah.
So Trump is nothing more than a spoiled daddy's boy. Born on third base and thought he had a home run. He has that attitude.
Yeah.
And again, we're the same age. When I was a kid, a guy grew up in the Bronx. He used to threaten me. We had enough of you. We're sending you to military school. I'll be good.
Yeah.
Trump was so out of it, they sent him to military school in Cornwall, New York, in the middle of nowhere. Imagine being a young guy, being dressed up and dragged, time to get up, time to go to bed, eating crap food. That's how narcissistic Trump is. Mm. They could not control him. They had to send him to military school.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. That's funny you say that. It's Italian. I'm Cuban, right? Not too far from your culture in many ways. My mom used to say to me when I was a little kid, to me and my brothers, if you keep misbehaving, te voy a mandar a la escuela pupilo. Escuela pupilo means, you know, we're going to send you to one of these military academies. You know, it's funny. It's funny. But, you know, it's funny you say that as well. I'm thinking to myself now culturally. My dad was a working stiff. He had like two or three jobs. We're immigrants, came from Cuba, had no money. My mom worked in a factory sewing shoes. My dad worked really hard. I mean, I grew up poor. I mean, I'm not proud of it, but I am at the same time. So when I see these guys, these people you and I just referred to as the actors, including Mr. Trump, you know what? They ain't real people. And I think you got to be a real person to understand the Ukraine conflict, to understand China, to understand Gaza. I don't think these people can fix these problems because they don't have that thing. I don't know what it is, you know, la cosa adentro, right? That maybe guys like you and I from the streets have, you know? I don't know.
The other thing, I told you, I launched a movement called Occupy Peace, and I read a farewell address of George Washington, a real man that fought. It basically says, don't get involved in any of these foreign entanglements. Exactly. This stuff has been going on for centuries. What business is it of mine as an American what India and Russia do with each other?
Right.
How dare you say what they should do? How dare you should say what Brazil should do?
Yeah.
What China should do?
Iran.
And any one of these people, by the way, that supports war, go over there and dress up. Go over there and fight. Send your money, send your wife, send your kids, send your transgenders, or shut up.
Right.
Can you imagine Lindsey Graham fighting? That guy couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag.
How about Lindsay?
That sloppy, arrogant boy over there in Florida? Fine. Yeah, not so fine. A little fat slob that says starve the Palestinians to death.
Mm-hmm.
And then people say, oh, we don't like you, Mr. Salenti. You get angry. We don't like your language. We're little boys and girls still in kindergarten, and we listen to our teacher. Mm-hmm. Now, you be a good boy. You don't become angry at the slaughter of innocent people in front of everybody's eyes, starving them to death, bombing them into ruins. Mm-hmm. Remember Trump's son-in-law, 2024 March. That's very valuable waterfront property over there in Gaza.
Let's
move them out into the Negev Desert. Oh, Jared Kushner?
Yeah.
You mean when Netanyahu used to come to America, he used to stay with the Kushners?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you sense I've seen what's going on in the last week, some of the reporting about Republicans that are leaving the party, MAGA faithful who no longer want to be MAGA faithful. Do you think this Israel thing where I was interviewing Bibi's spokesperson, former spokesperson here not long ago, and I told him, I said, look, I just got to tell you, dude, I got to tell you, I'm insulted when I see your president go to America, show up at the Congress, pound his chest like, hey, I'm here, I'm in charge. You go shine my shoes. You get me some water. You over there, get me some coffee. I mean, what the hell is this? This guy, Bibi Netanyahu, has been so empowered in the last 10, 20 years, but more so under Trump than I've seen before. It's insulting to Americans. And I'm sensing that Americans are insulted for the first time, and the polls seem to say that as well. At least that's what I'm seeing. You tell me. Gerald?
Well, yeah, the polls show it, but most people don't care. The average person doesn't know what's going on. And again, when you're talking about Trump, why does he do it? We got $100 million from Sheldon Adelson. I don't know the number. They say between 100 to 200 million from his wife, Marion Adelson, yeah, when he ran in the last election. He has all these Zionists in there. You got that little Huckleberry clown boy.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I don't want to hear this fairy tale that God told Abraham 3,500 years ago, little Huckleboy, that that this land belongs to the Jewish people. What did God got locked? Sure. 3,500 yeah, years. God hasn't talked to anybody before or after.
It would be like, you know, the United States, you have to leave. Everyone has to leave. And, you know, we got to give it to the Navajo. After all, they were there before. I mean, yeah, every place has somebody who was there before somebody else was there. I've never understood that argument quite well. By the way, speaking of people who have been in their land for thousands of years, let's go back to the Indians. Were you surprised when India yesterday essentially took its middle finger out and pointed it at Washington and said, no, we're not going to do what you want us to do. We've decided for the sake of our people to buy the cheapest oil we can buy. That's what the market indicates. That's what the market's telling us to do. And that's what we're going to do. Were you surprised by that reaction, or you thought they'd kowtow a little bit?
No, not at all, because only 2% of their GDP is from doing trade with the United States.
Ah,
that's it.
I didn't know that. 2%.
Yeah, that's it.
So they don't.
And again, they're becoming more self-sustaining and self-sufficient. They're buying, making their own products, and the people are buying them there. That's what used to be in America. By the way, I'm up here in Kingston. There's shirt factories that used to be up here. Gant, one after another. Factory, factory, factory. Again, that little slime ball guy, Slick Willie. NAFTA, remember that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, send the jobs to Mexico. You can get cheap labor. Mm. Yeah, go over to China. Listen, China didn't have the heavy industry or high-tech ability before the Western nations went in there and used cheap labor and gave them all the manufacturing that they never had before. Mm. And now China's leading the world in it. Look at the EVs, one after another. So, no, they're becoming more self-sufficient and self-sustaining. The people are buying their own products. They're making them there.
Yeah.
They don't need American products that much. They don't have to do business. Again, only 2% of India's GDP comes from trade with the United States.
So,
and you look at China's trade numbers, too. They're going up because they're dealing more around the world.
So
this is the beginning of the end of America.
So what should we do then, Gerald? I mean, the idea that we have to hate China because they're economically extremely successful. We have to hate Russia because they have a powerful military. We have to hate Venezuela because they've got a lot of oil. I mean, at some point, shouldn't the policy be good for you? Let's figure out a way where we both can grow as a result of your fortune. What is this with we have to be better than everyone and tell them what to do? Where the hell does that come from, and how do we change it?
It comes from crazy people that are politicians. And you don't ask a murderer why they're a murderer, a thief why they're a thief. These are evil, narcissistic people. Mm-hmm. We need a new third party in America. It's a crime syndicate. Again, one of my books, this was an international bestseller, Trends 2000, but one of them, another big seller, Trend Tracking, far better than Megatrends, Time Magazine, 1989. I became a political atheist when the Iranian conflict broke out in the late 1970s.
Uh-huh.
I was living in Chicago and D.C. 28 years old, I was staying at the Willard Hotel, putting meetings on at the Hay Adams. Again, I was on the other side. And they taught us to hate Iran. People had no idea the United States overthrow in the Great Britain of the democratically elected government of Mossadegh in 1953. Mossadegh had the nerve, the gall to say, no, that oil does not belong to Anglo-Iranian Oil, better known today as BP, or Standard Oil, better known to as ExxonMobil today. It belongs to the Iranian people. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
The facts are all there. Churchill, that slimy jerk that everybody looked up to, and Kermit Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt's grandson, great-grandson, see, was at the CIA, they overthrew the government. I said to myself, as everybody hated what was going on. I said, this thing's for real and it's going to keep going. And that's when I became a trend forecaster. I started betting on the gold and oil futures, $5,000 bet in each one, and brought it up to almost $750,000 back then. I lost a lot of the dough. I'm a young guy doing a lot of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, people have no idea the facts is what I'm trying to say. They learn to, look, when I was a kid, they had us hiding under a desk because the Russians were going to drop a bomb. All right? As a little kid, I'm scared every time I saw a plane.
Yeah.
And how stupid could you be? Hiding under a desk is going to make a difference?
Yeah, and it seems like the Russians have bent over backwards for the past... Since 1991, the Russians have done everything possible to kiss our butts and try and be like us. And everything we've ever done on is crap on them. And I think finally the Russians seem to be saying to themselves, even with this situation now with Trump sending his buddies over here to negotiate and stuff, it seems to me like the Russians, the Indians, the Chinese, the South Africans, the Egyptians, the Iranians are just kind of saying to each other, enough. If we just band
exactly
together.
It.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so obvious. And why don't we see that? Why doesn't Marco Rubio, my old buddy growing up
Marco
in Miami?
Rubio.
Well, I mean.
Why doesn't Mickey Mouse talk to Minnie Mouse, Marco Rubio, a little boy of nothing?
Yeah.
No, to make it clear again, in this article by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, I'm just going to read one part. Washington concluded that Russia needed to be confronted with or distracted by problems that would leave the Russian government less confident or able to counter Washington's aggression elsewhere. Ukraine presented the perfect opportunity for Washington to advance its hegemonic agenda. Remember, this is in February of 2014.
Hmm.
In a speech at the National Press Club last December, 2013, Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland boasted that Washington had invested $5 billion in non-governmental organizations, NGOs in Ukraine for the purpose to teach democracy. They overthrew the government.
Yeah.
The people have no idea.
We fomented.
When I was a young kid, I started learning. I said, Dad, why doesn't people understand this? He said, son, take it easy. People have little minds. I got to know that Bezos got married, $50 million, front page pictures in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
Marrying his chick with the fake boobs with a platform on that he could walk across. I got to see this stuff day after day after day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A guy gets caught doing something and it's all news.
Yeah.
A celebrity dies and it's big news. That's what the people know. It's not a media. They're prostitutes. They're media whores that get paid to put out by their corporate pimps and government whoremasters. It's not journalism anymore.
No.
Pick up the newspaper. Get the paper of record. I call it the toilet paper record, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. One big picture after another. Big picture. Go back to the 1970s. There were no pictures.
Yeah.
There was copy. There were words. There was journalism. All gone. All gone. All gone. Yeah. Slick Willie. 1996 Federal Communications Act. There were thousands of independent radio stations, TV stations, and newspapers. Now six companies control 92% of America's media.
Yeah. And it's funny because they don't have that many viewers and yet they do very, very well. I mean, you know my history. I mean, I was a correspondent and an anchor at CNN, at NBC, at Univision, Fox News, all of those places. Gerald, I can tell you from experience, they're all the same. You get certain talking points that come from Washington. You can't go away from those points. And if you do, you get fired, as I did. So, yeah, there's a hegemony that's not only worldwide for the United States. There's a hegemony within the United States in terms of what you can say, what you should know, what you're allowed to know, and the information that you're allowed to receive. And it's coming from those same people that you and I talked about before. And I'm not sure, you know, I'll tell you, I've said this before. Here I am at RT, and I've said this on many occasions, I have more control of my narrative and journalistic independence working here than I ever did at any of those places I just named. What do you think of that?
Look, I used to be on Oprah, The Today Show, Good Morning America, Fox and Friends, on and on and on. I got blacklisted from everybody.
Because you told the truth.
I came out, I said, you could go back to when USA Today was a big newspaper. They used to run our top trends every year. It was a big newspaper. Go back to 2000. We had a 2001 won't be our year, Trendsier says. I warned that a wave of anti-Americanism was sweeping the globe and Americans wouldn't be safe at home or abroad. 9/11 happens. They couldn't believe I called this.
Wow.
I said, what are you talking about? I said, look what Bill Clinton's doing. Look, Madeleine Albright, Google it up. Madeleine Albright, Leslie Stahl, 60 Minutes. Leslie Stahl asks Madeleine Albright, is the price of 500,000 Iraqi children under the age of five dead because of what Bill Clinton's done with sanctions and the war in Iraq worth the price? Mm. She says, it's worth the price. So then the Afghan war begins, and I'm still on. They said, where do you think it's going? I said, there's no way they're going to win it. I said, if Alexander the Great couldn't pull it off, if the British couldn't beat the Afghans into the Valley of Death, row the 600.
Or the Russians.
If the Russians couldn't beat them. I said, what makes you think we're going to beat them? We haven't won a war since World War II. Why, you anti-American? How dare you say that? And I got blacklisted from everybody.
It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Same experience. I was at CNN and I started telling stories about some of the things the CIA had done. I'm Hispanic, so my dad always told me what happened in Guatemala, what happened with Trujillo, what happened in Colombia. I mean, we basically would go down there. We didn't like a president. We'd take him out. We'd start a civil war. Hundreds of thousands of people would die. Okay, but so what? We got the United Sugar Company or whatever the hell it's called now running the place down there, which is really what we wanted in the first place. Time and time again, as you probably know, you're a smart guy. That kind of thing happened. That was kind of the thing that got me thinking that maybe the things I was being told weren't necessarily true, even though I still wanted to believe them. We still want to love our country. But my God, right?
Oh, I love the country. I own three of the most historic buildings in America. It's the most historic four corners in America. A 1763, a 1774, and a 1750 building. The other one's a museum, 1681. The seeds of democracy were sown here. That's why I bought these buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a true American. I believe in the American spirit. But yeah, and what you're talking about was going on. There's that great book, War's a Racket, by Smedley Butler, the most decorated Marine in history at the time. And he says exactly what you were talking about with United, for taking over all these countries, killing people and
United
destroying
Fruit Company.
Them.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and how about the Nobel Peace of Crap Prize winner Barack Obama, who lied his way into office as a peace candidate? He gets into office, Afghan troop surge.
Yeah. Hey, Netanyahu.
Oh, and
thinks,
I want that guy Gaddafi out of it.
Netanyahu thinks that Trump should get that award next week, too, by the way. You saw him. He's nominating him for it.
Yeah.
It's a great story. Gerald, we're out of time. You know, I love your spirit, man. I love who you are. I love that you've always fought the good fight. You've never been afraid to say what you think. And you love to engage in real passionate conversations. I feel like I'm with one of my paisan, one of my buddies, you know, where I was growing up when we talk about things like this. So you're welcome back anytime. I really enjoy discussions with you. And I appreciate so much what you're doing with Trends.
I appreciate everything that you're doing. I mean, you're a real, real brave man doing what you're doing and speaking the truth. And again, you know, I bought these buildings. So I was going to leave the country at one time.
Hmm.
And I realized I can't run away. I'm only me because I'm a Napolitano, born in the Bronx, born to be free. If I was born in Altavilla Appina, Vico Quince, I wouldn't be me. I love America. And I love the true spirit of this country. And that's why I fight for it.
And I love that. And I love that about you. Thank you, my friend. We'll see you again soon.
Thank
God bless.
You.
Take care. Well, that's it from us. Boy, what a wonderful conversation. What a guy, huh? What a spirit in that guy. You can feel it, right? You can also check out more of the spirit and the culture of what we try and bring you as well. Not just here, because, you know, we love doing this. We love truth. But my podcast is called Journalistically Speaking. If you get a chance, check it out. It's not as hot as Gerald's is probably. It probably doesn't have as many people, but we're getting there. And I'll also look for you on X or on Twitter at Rick Sanchez TV. Thanks so much for being with us. and we'll look for you again soon. I'm Rick Sanchez, out.